This is Audible.
Welcome to Texas Hell. Tebow Sterling, Texas Bounty Hunter, Book 1, A Western Short. Written by J.C. Hulsey. Narrated by Lynn Roberts. Chapter 1. Hiccup Springs, Texas. Tebow Sterling, 6'6". Thin and raw-boned, with sun-dyed skin, salt-and-pepper hair, turned that way from his way of living, sat atop his horse, and looked down the main street of this flea-bitten town. That is, if anyone could call it a town. It only had three buildings on the dusty street. Of course, the one Tebow was interested in was the saloon. He always checked every saloon in every small burg he rode through. What was he looking for, you might ask? Tebow is a bounty hunter. This trip, the bounty hunter from Texas was on the trail of 2 16-year-old brothers, Brett and Bart Hunsacker. Some might say that Tebow shouldn't go after someone so young. Tebow's answer is, if they're old enough to take a life, they're old enough to pay with their lives. He had been traveling for 2 weeks and felt he was getting closer. When he questioned the bartender at this latest watering hole, he said the two youngsters had stopped in his establishment wanting a beer. He tried to explain to them that there was a town ordinance against serving minors. They refused to accept what he had to say and proceeded to break some chairs over the tables. The bartender said he sent one of his regulars to get the sheriff. Sheriff Bartholomew Wainsworth has been sheriff for more years than the brothers had been living, and was extremely dedicated to the word of the law. If the law said spitting in the street was against the law, then you had better not spit in the street. So when he walked through the swinging doors, he wasn't in a very good mood for having been awoken from his slumber. Maybe it was because he was still half asleep, or maybe he was getting too old for the job. But while he was fussing with one of the boys, the other came up behind him and broke a chair over his head. He fell to the floor like a broken doll and didn't move. The boy that had been fussing told the other one to get the sheriff's gun and give it to him. The boy did as he was told, and the fussing boy turned the gun on the bartender and told him,
"Now we don't want beer. We want a bottle of your best whiskey."
"Well, when you got a gun in your face, you do what you're told." I gave him a sealed bottle of the house's best and watched as they both left.
"You see which way they went?" Tebow asked.
"Nope. Wasn't going to take a chance on getting shot. What do you want with them boys, anyway?"
"They killed a man up in Kansas. You're lucky you didn't get shot. Couple of the coldest individuals, according to the folks that witnessed the killing."
"Sure hope you find them before they hurt someone else like they did the sheriff."
"By the way, how is the sheriff?"
"He's still unconscious. Doctor says he might not make it."
"That's a shame, but it's what I've come to expect from the likes of them boys. Pour me a beer, and tell me if there's a clean bed in this burg."
The bartender drew a mug of beer, placed it in front of Tebow, and said, "There's a couple of rooms upstairs. The sheets were changed before all the girls left."
"How long ago was that?"
"Let's see. I reckon it's nigh on 6 months now. You sure could have had a good time back then."
"I reckon I'll take one of them beds. How much?"
"Nickel for the beer and 2 bits for the room."
Tebow placed a shiny newly minted half dollar on the bar. "Keep the change."
"I ain't never seen one so shiny,"
he exclaimed, picking it up.
"And it's real."
As he bit it.
"Yep, she's real, all right."
"Which room?" Tebow asked, finishing the beer and wiping his mouth.
First one at the top of the stairs. It ain't locked, 'cause we ain't never had no need for a lock. Ain't much goes on in our little town. Fact is, it's been mighty peaceful until those boys showed up.
Tebow placed the empty mug on the bar. I'll go stable my horse and be back. There's a stable? He asked.
No stable, but you can put your animal in the back of the saloon. There's a little shed there where I keep mine. Just go through the alley, and it's right there.
Much obliged. He tipped his hat, turned, then turned back. This burg got a name?
Hiccup Springs.
Makes sense, he commented. Then he turned and left to take care of his horse. Bandy has been his horse ever since he was a kid. How long ago had he been a kid? He was an old 24 years. He had gotten Bandy on his 18th birthday as a 9-month-old colt. Pa had traveled to the next county to get him from a breeder that specialized in Appaloosas. Bandy was about the most beautiful thing Tebow had ever seen, if he didn't count Haley McCord.
Chapter 2. Haley and Tebow had grown up together, her being a next-door neighbor. They went to school together. They spent most every day together when they were just kids. Then, something happened when Haley reached 16. She stopped climbing trees and going hunting and fishing with him. His feelings was hurt, but being a 16-year-old, he really didn't miss her that much. After all, she was a girl, and everybody knew that girls weren't much fun when it came to the important stuff, like digging after an armadillo or fishing for crawdads. So Tebow continued his life without Haley around. One of the kids brought a pistol to school one day. Tebow had often shot his pa's pistol, but there was something different about this gun. It was so shiny, it almost sparkled.
"Where did you get it?"
Tebow asked Butch, as they went about 100 yards from the schoolhouse into some trees.
"I stole it," was his reply. "And you better not tell nobody."
"I won't tell nobody, if you let me hold it."
"Well,"
he hesitated,
"I reckon it'll be all right."
He handed it to Tebow. When Tebow's hand closed around the handle, he felt something he had never felt before. The gun felt as if it was a part of his body. He held it up, pointed it at a tree, and pulled the trigger. The sound was deafening, yet Tebow didn't hear it. He was mesmerized by this heavy piece of metal in his hand. He knew at that moment he had to own this beautiful weapon, or at least one comparable to it.
"You want to sell it?" "How come you shot it? You was just supposed to hold it and look at it. You wasn't supposed to shoot it."
Tebow didn't hear. "You want to sell it?" he asked again.
"How much you take for it?" "I can't sell it. I'd get in trouble."
"How you gonna get in trouble? You said you stole it. Who'd you steal it from?"
"There's this new cowboy come to town. He was wearing this gun tied low on his hip."
"Okay,"
Tebow inquired.
"How'd you steal it?"
"The cowboy took it off in the barber shop when he went into the bathhouse."
"Did anybody see you take it?"
"Nope. The barber was busy pouring hot water in the cowboy's tub. I grabbed it and run as fast as I could."
"Tell you what," Tebow said confidently,
"I know how you can stay out of trouble about this."
"How?"
"Let me have the gun. Of course I'll give you something, but if you let me have it, and somebody asked you about it, you can say you don't have it, and you don't know who has it. That way, you won't get in trouble, 'cause you won't have the gun. What do you say?"
That was how Tebow got his first pistol. The same pistol he wore now. It had served him well through the years, had made him more than enough money to quit what he was doing. But to Tebow Sterling, money wasn't what drove him. It was what happened to his ma and pa, to Haley, all those years ago. It was almost a year after the war had ended. Yes, the war had ended for some, but not for all. There were renegade bands roaming the country, looting, burning, and raping. One day, when Tebow was in town picking up supplies and seed, these killers, these monsters came to his home, killed his pa first, then attacked his ma and killed her after they were finished with her. Then they traveled the 2 miles to Haley's home. It was a repeat of what happened to his folks. However, the way it looked, it took a lot for Haley to die. Tebow returned home to discover the horrid scene. Then he noticed the smoke coming from the direction of the McCord place. He looked one last time at his ma and pa. Knowing they were gone from this world, he jumped back in the wagon and spurred the team toward Haley.
"Please, Lord, let her be all right,"
he cried aloud. But apparently, God was busy with other folks, because it seemed his prayers went unanswered. The house was burned almost to the ground, but Haley's body was in the yard, tied to one of the wash line posts. Her clothes had been ripped from her body, and she was covered with blood. Tebow jumped from the wagon, running to her. He quickly cut her down and laid her on the ground. He removed his jacket and covered her as best as he could. Tears were streaming down his face, and he spoke.
"Please forgive me for not understanding you, wanting to be just a girl. I was convinced that it didn't matter that you didn't want to fish for crawdads. But it did matter. I was going to come to you and ask you for forgiveness, and maybe ask you if you'd go walking with me. Oh, Haley, I love you."
He rose, turned, and walked to the barn. He went inside and found a shovel. He walked slowly out to the little rise where the family cemetery was located and began digging. He dug a shallow grave, then went back for Haley. He finished filling in the dirt, then turned his eyes skyward.
"Lord, did you not hear me asking for Haley's life? Where were you? She had her whole life ahead of her. I was planning a life with her as my wife. Now she's gone because you let her die."
He lowered his head, placed his hat on his head, turned, and walked to the buckboard. He traveled back to his home and buried his ma and pa behind the house on a little rise. He didn't pray over their graves, because he felt God wasn't listening to him anymore. He went slowly back to the house, went inside, fell to the floor sobbing so hard his whole body was shaking. He cried until there were no more tears. He sat up and leaned against the wall.
"What am I going to do?"
he said aloud, knowing no one was there to hear.
"I'm still a kid. How am I going to survive without my family?"
He fell into a fitful sleep there on the floor. When he awoke, it was still dark. He struggled to his feet, feeling exhausted from the past events.
"Well, I reckon I got 2 ways to do this. I can either stay here and wallow in my pity, or I can leave this place with all my memories and strike out on my own."
"What are you going to do on your own?" A still small voice inside his head seemed to whisper in his ear.
"You're still a kid." "I may be a kid, but I know how to use my pistol. Ever since I got this pistol off of Butch Flanagan, I've been practicing. I bet I'm as good as Wyatt Earp or Billy the Kid.
That's when the thought occurred to him.
I'm going to hunt down those renegades that took my pa and ma and Haley from me. I'm going to hunt them down and make them pay. Every last one of them low-down, yellow-livered skunks. I'm going to hunt them down if it takes my whole life.
So it was on that particular day, at that particular time, in that particular Texas town, Tebow Sterling, Texas bounty hunter, was born. Chapter 3. Tebow learned that he was good, in fact, very good with his weapon. Some said he was faster than a mad rattlesnake. Others said it was like a lightning flash. His gun seemed to jump back in the holster before it was pulled out. Tebow always stopped at the sheriff's office in each town to scan the wanted posters. He was hoping to see flyers on some of the gang that killed his parents and Haley. Although, he really didn't expect to see anybody, because he didn't know what they looked like. Perhaps some of the dirty deeds some did would be like the ones of the renegades. In the meantime, he would study the flyers and pick one or two of the most wanted. The ones who would kill indiscriminately, without any regard for human life. Those were the ones that Tebow Sterling went after. And one distinct thing about Tebow Sterling that made him different from others in the same vocation, he always got who he went after. He always brought them back, whether it be handcuffed to the saddle or laying across the saddle. He was feared by all and written about in newspapers and dime novels. Some said he was the way he was because he had no heart. And they could be right, because Tebow's heart became hardened on that day that forever changed his life. Chapter 4. Tebow woke early the next morning and lay still listening to the sounds around him. The room and the bed hadn't been bad, but they hadn't been anything special either. He was going to have a talk with the bartender about the sheets having been changed 6 months ago. He figured they hadn't been changed in a lot longer than that. But, he thought, what difference does it make now? I've slept in a lot worse places than this. Best to move along and forget about it. He got dressed, if that's what you call it, strapping on his gun belt, pulling on his boots, and placing his hat on his head. Tebow very seldom undressed completely, because he never knew what was waiting around the corner. He headed down the stairs and stopped when he heard some loud voices.
"I ain't gonna tell you again, old man."
It sounded like the voice of a kid.
"It would be real easy to shoot you and take what we want. But we enjoy being served like rich, important folks. Now, I'm going to say this real slow so there ain't no misunderstanding. Hand us a bottle of the best stuff you got. Now."
Tebow took the rest of the steps as quietly as he could, and what he saw caused his hand to close around the handle of his Colt 45. He stepped from the last step into the room and stopped. "Hunsacker," he said calmly, but loud enough to be heard. The two brothers swung around as one. The oldest boy had the sheriff's pistol in his hand, although it was pointed at the floor.
"Who are you, mister?"
the boy asked, surprised.
"This ain't no concern of yours. Me and my brother would recommend you just mosey on out that door and move on down the road."
"Can't do that," Tebow said, grinning.
"What do you mean, you can't do that? Are you wanting to die? 'Cause that's what's going to happen if you don't do like I told you."
"If anybody's going to die today,
it's gonna be you. Now, here's my recommendation for you boys. You, with the pistol, carefully laid on the bar. You, standing there with your mouth catching flies, turn around and put your hands on the bar, palms down. The one without the gun did as he was told. He turned and placed his hands on the bar. The one with the gun began raising it up, just as the slug from Tebow's 45 sliced through his chest, just to the right of his heart. The gun slipped from his hand as he breathed his last breath, and his body slid to the dusty floor. The other boy looked at his brother, then fell to the floor screaming,
"You killed my brother, and now I'm going to kill you!"
He grabbed for the gun, laying on the floor. He had almost pulled back the hammer when another slug from Tebow's gun slammed his head back against the bar as it entered his left eye. As the gun smoke began to clear, Tebow pushed the spent cartridges out of the cylinder and replaced them with new ones, then slid his pistol into the holster. The bartender peeked his head from below the bar.
"Is it over?"
he asked, standing up and looking at the bodies.
"I thank you, kind sir, for stepping in. I do believe that boy would have killed me."
"On a day's work. You got an undertaker in this town?"
"Nope, but Fred Sloan, the barber, doubles as undertaker. In fact, he doubles for a lot of things. You want I should go get him?"
"I would highly recommend it, unless you want to leave them for decorations. Where can I get some breakfast?"
"Kitchen's in the back here. My old woman should be fixing something in a bit. You're mighty welcome to join us. I'm going after Fred. Be back shortly."
Tebow nodded and said, "I'm going to look in on my horse. I'll be back after I see he's all right. Should give you time to get the place cleaned up." They both walked out the door together. Then each turned in a different direction. The bartender to get the undertaker. Tebow through the alley where Bandy was waiting. Chapter 5. "How you doing, boy?" Tebow asked when he got close. For those folks that claimed Tebow didn't have a heart had never seen him with Bandy. He and Bandy were as close as two friends could be, with one being an animal. Bandy had gotten Tebow out of many serious situations. Tebow rubbed between Bandy's eyes and talked softly to him. "I'll bring you a carrot or an apple if I can find one. If not, I surely will bring you some sugar. How's that sound?" Bandy nickered, as if he understood every word. He pushed his head close to Tebow's and rubbed up and down.
"Okay,"
Tebow scolded softly.
"Don't go getting all mushy with me. You know I don't like that."
Yet, he pushed back with his forehead and mimicked Bandy's movements.
"I'll see you later."
He turned and walked back through the alley. As he entered through the swinging doors of the saloon, he smelled fresh coffee and bacon. His stomach started growling and caused him to wonder about the last time he had eaten. When he got on a hot trail, he sometimes forgot to eat. However, he never forgot about his horse. He always made sure Bandy was well fed and taken care of.
"Come on in."
The bartender looked up from mopping the floor.
"Breakfast's about ready. Go on back. I'll be back soon as I finish this. Tell the old woman she's to be nice to you."
"Maybe I'll wait on you. Don't want to upset no woman. Least of all, no cook. I try to stay in good with cooks."
"Go on back. She ain't as bad as I make her out to be."
Tebow shrugged and went through the curtain to the back, basically following his nose. The closer he got, the more he enjoyed the smell. He spotted a stooped gray-haired woman standing at a cast-iron stove, stirring eggs in a skillet. She didn't turn from what she was doing, but asked,
"Who are you, and what are you doing in my kitchen?"
Thibault wondered how she knew he was there when she didn't turn around. "My name's Thibault Sterling, ma'am." As he removed his hat and smoothed at his hair. "The bartender, I assume he's your man. He told me I could join the two of you for breakfast. If that's not all right with you, I can leave and go elsewhere."
"Oh, hush, and sat yourself down. Sides, where else you gonna find something to eat as good as my cooking?"
"I'm mighty grateful, ma'am." He pulled out a chair and sat down. "Sure smells good, ma'am."
"My name's Callie, Callie Crestview. That man of mine is called Harvey Crestview, but everybody calls him Harv."
Thibault's brow frowned at her name. It sounded so much like Haley.
"I say something wrong? You look like you got a sour stomach. Here, drink some of this."
She placed a cup on the table and poured it full of coffee. "Thanks, ma'am." He began and was quickly interrupted.
"What's my name? It sure ain't ma'am. Try again now that you got some coffee in you."
"Thank you, Callie. I sure appreciate you letting me eat with you."
"Shucks, we appreciate what you've done for me."
Harv came through the curtain.
"Saved my life, that's for sure. Sharing what we have with you ain't hardly enough the way I figure. If there's anything we can do for you, and I mean anything, all you got to do is ask."
"I appreciate that, but sharing a meal is plenty enough."
"Dish it up, Ma," Harv said. "Sure smells good."
It was indeed one of the best breakfasts Thibault had eaten. In fact, it reminded him of his Ma's cooking, way back when everything was all right.
"Want some more coffee?"
Callie asked. "I've had plenty, thank you. It's been quite a spell since I've eaten so good." He glanced at Harv. "There is something you could do for me."
"You name it, and if I can, I'll do it. No questions asked."
"I would like to have a carrot or two, or maybe an apple for my horse. If those aren't available, then some sugar would be fine."
"Is that all? We just got some fine carrots out of our garden. You can have all you want."
"Just a couple of large ones, if you got them." Callie handed two large carrots to him. He took them and said, "I surely do appreciate your hospitality and your kindness. Now, if you'll excuse me." He turned and walked through the curtains and out of the saloon, through the alley and up to Bandy, who whinnied his hello. "I told you I'd be back, and look what I got for you." He held out the carrot, and Bandy bit into it. A couple of bites, and he was ready for the second one. "You about ready to get on the trail? I think we've been here long enough, don't you?" He threw the blanket over Bandy's back, smoothed it down, and slung the saddle over it. He reached under and grabbed the cinch. He pulled it tight and said, "Oh, no, you don't." He laid his knee into Bandy's ribs, causing him to let out the air he was holding, so Thibault couldn't tighten the cinch all the way. This was a ritual they went through almost every time they saddled up. When he had the saddle cinched and ready, he placed his left foot in the stirrup and pulled himself into the saddle. He kneed Bandy, and they headed out of the small town, west into the fading sunlight, just as it descended behind the horizon. Thibault and Bandy would head back home for a short spell, then go on another hunt for the lawbreakers. This is the first of the Texas Bounty Hunter series. Be on the lookout for several different Texas bounty hunters as you travel.
with each of them tracking down the vermin of the states and territories of the Old West. This has been Welcome to Texas Hell. Tebow Sterling, Texas Bounty Hunter, Book 1, A Western Short. Written by J.C. Holsey. Narrated by Lynn Roberts. Copyright November 2016 by J.C. Holsey. Production copyright 2016 by Outlaw Publishing, LLC.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.